Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Thursday, July 11th, 2019. 7-Eleven, don't forget to go get your free Slurpee today. With me today, I have two guests who are headed off to do just that. As soon as we are done here, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, good to be here.
Glad you're with me today. And also, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Good morning.
I'm glad you're with me. Now, John, we talked yesterday about, briefly, we talked about Zoom and we talked about how changes were made.
PSA.
Yeah, we did the quick PSA yesterday. The in-depth information on Tuesday about Zoom deciding that in order to make a better user experience, because clicking a checkbox is really hard, they were going to install a secret web server on your computer without your knowledge. And that was a bad move on their part, even though they are portraying it as we're just doing what users finally wanted, as opposed to we are doing the right thing by removing that. So again, if you have Zoom, please check for updates. But what happened was the latest iteration is that Apple has released an update that will just go ahead and scoop that thing out for you.
By scoop it out, you mean silently remove it without telling you.
Yes. I mean, they told us that's what's going to happen, but yes.
I like the part about removing it. I don't like the part about doing it without telling me.
Yeah.
I mean, Apple's all about notifications. Everything is a notification, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get this software update, you got this coming, you got this event, you know, it's time for breakfast. Notify me. But when you go into my machine and actually remove something, silence.
Yeah. Yeah. And we
but
talked
about, but I like what Apple did. I just wish they would tell me what they did, because if I'm mucking around with Zoom and watching what's going on and getting ready to do my own stuff from the command line, like Andrew, you wrote about instructions on how to do, I'd like to know that the web server that I'm getting ready to delete is not there, and I'd like to know why.
Yeah. And I think for me, that's the sticky part of this, is that Apple released the messaging around, this is what we're doing. You know, there was messaging around it, but a lot of times when you get one of those update dialogues up in the corner of your screen and you go install the update, you know, it's security updates and bug fixes, you know, or it'll just be a security update and it'll say like more details available, you know, somewhere else in a filing cabinet in Cupertino or something, you know, and I want there to be transparency around that. Like, that's part of what makes, I know this sounds odd, but that's what makes security secure, is transparency. Tell me what you're doing, because I at least want to be aware. And that's the thing I find frustrating. Like, in this case, I agree. You are removing something that was installed on my computer without my knowledge and without my permission, because I didn't tell Zoom, yeah, it's cool, install a web server. They just kind of did it. And so, first of all, that's still a huge black mark against Zoom. And that's a whole extra frustrating thing, because like what Zoom does and the capabilities you get with Zoom are super duper cool if you need a video conferencing tool that will record everybody and that does like all these useful things, you know, that make it a really viable alternative to other applications that purport to do the same thing. So
you know what I'd like Apple to do, Kelly?
Yeah.
I would like Apple, you know, they're requiring developers to do certain things, like, you know, to digitally sign their apps to be notarized. I'd like Apple to require developers to, during the install process, open up a window and show an install log. And while the installer is running, you have a window with a log, running log, showing everything it's doing and what it's installing. And then when you're done, that file is written to the folder for the app or somewhere easy, or a folder called install logs.
Didn't we used to have that?
Some apps used to do that in the past, and I think developers got away from doing that because they really don't want you to know what they're installing.
Well, on the one hand, yeah. On the other hand, like I remember seeing that. Like, I remember, you know, staring at an install window. But that was when you had an installer to run and not just drag an application to the folder.
Installer package.
Yeah.
So even if you're dragging it to the applications folder, there should be a prohibition against a system that doesn't show you everything that's being installed and a place where you can go look at it at your leisure.
Mm-hmm. I like
that'd be nice.
I like the installer log file. Andrew, you're on board with that?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's also not taking anything away from anybody. Like, if you want to install something, go ahead and install it. You know, but you should have to leave me a trail of what it is you actually installed. And, you know, somebody made a good point in all the Zoom kerfuffle that the directory that you have to remove starts with a dot. And the only reason you start a directory name with a dot is when you want to make sure it doesn't show, that people can't see it. And that's exactly what happened. A decision was consciously made to make this a directory that wouldn't just show up if you're like browsing through folders in the Finder. So that's another thing I think would be super helpful. Like, I remember when you used to have to run an installer, like the thing that you downloaded wasn't the application itself. It was a little application that you ran to install the application.
And
that's less. Well, some of them are PKG. Some people like built custom like installer.app or whatever, and you just double click it. And again, much like Zoom, like, I understand the convenience of you just haul this to the application folder, and the first time you launch it, it takes a little longer because it's writing preference files and all these other things. But I would like to know what those things are. And it would be nice if that were the next evolution of security. You know, we've got the read-only system files, John, like we talked about on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to see the next evolution be, you know, now that the system is a little bit, has been hardened a little bit in the new version of macOS, I'd like if maybe in a forthcoming version of macOS, we get something where there's an audit trail for what that app installed. Because the only way I really find out now is when I go to uninstall it. If I drag an app to the trash, I have the Hazel preference. I have Hazel installed on my machine. And Hazel is set to, if I move an application to the trash, it pops up and asks me if I want to move all these files related to that application to the trash, like the preference file and you know, settings and different things like that, if I want to throw all those out as well. And there's always a bunch of those when I uninstall something.
That's something that I don't think happens on the Mac, except in rare cases, and that is when you drag an app out of the applications folder, you're wondering what's left dangling around your system. Mm-hmm. And there are cleanup apps that claim to be able to go and find those things.
Mm-hmm.
But you could modify macOS so that when an application is deleted, it goes to a record file that was created during the install.
Yep.
And goes and finds those pieces and parts that were installed with it and deletes those too.
Mm-hmm.
And then gives you a list and said, you dragged an app to the trash can. I also deleted these supporting apps. Tick, 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 tick. Mm-hmm. Here's a little window. Here's a list.
I would like if that
would be cool.
I like the Hazel dialogue that pops up when I do that. I wish it were a system dialogue and that it wasn't Hazel, which is a separate app that I purchased and installed and configured this way to keep track of it. So, Andrew, how do you keep track of like uninstalling apps and stuff? You've always got a cool utility for things like this.
Yeah, so I have this tool called App Uninstaller. I'm mm-hmm. pretty sure it's in the Mac App Store.
Okay.
I don't remember who makes it, but basically I double click on it. I'm doing it right now. There's a scan button, so it scans for all of the apps you have on your Mac.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you a list, so you can check a box next to the app you want to remove. And when you click the remove button, it will remove all of the associated files that the app has.
And how does it know what they are? How does it know what they are and where they are?
I don't know.
I'm not sure either. I don't know how Hazel figures it out unless it's just a search on the like the application bundle string or something. That's the best I can do.
But it does show you where all those files were located, so I think that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give you a little glimpse into the directory of the Mac.
Hey, Kelly, would you put that in the show notes in case we want to try it out later?
Oh, I'm way ahead of you. It's already there.
All right.
Yeah, including the message to Andrew to make sure I get a link for it. I wish there were a better way to manage that, and I hope that's coming. And I hope that it becomes part of the system, like standard functions of the Finder, that when you remove an app, that some of that ancillary cruft goes with it. And, you know, part of what makes the nuke and pave option an attractive option in certain cases is all those things that you installed and then went, what am I doing? Like, I don't have any use for this app, or it doesn't do what I want, or it didn't work. When you remove those, if all you removed was the app and you don't have one of these utilities that will clean up the other stuff for you, all those files are still kicking around. And every time you migrate, all that stuff comes with it. So you could have preference files that go back years and years to apps that you never, that you haven't installed for, like, you know, three different iterations of hardware that are still in that folder because you've just been migrating all this time. And so that's why sometimes people suggest, like, it's time to nuke and pave, because there are some of these things like this that just accumulate over time, and mm-hmm. you know, it's just extra files, it's just extra overhead for your computer to have to manage.
Yeah, it's not just preferences, there are other components.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there doesn't have to be, like, the thing about it to me is that this strikes me as something that would be really handy, like the receipts folder. Every time you buy something, you know, there's a little receipt file that gets downloaded to the receipts folder when you buy things in the Mac App Store. And those receipts are great. And most people, like, this may be news to some people that that folder is there and that it's full of the receipts for stuff that you've purchased from the Mac App Store and installed. But most people don't ever need to know that's there. But then sometimes if something happens or you're having trouble with something, it's really nice to have that file there as a backup, as something you can rely on in order to help troubleshoot the issue that you're having. You know, the licensing isn't working properly, or it's not reading that I purchased it properly, there's something going on with it. Being able to troubleshoot that stuff effectively is really handy. So it's one of those things that would just really be nice in case you need it. And a little tiny text file with, like, a list of here's what was installed wouldn't take up a ton of space. Like, I have a lot of apps installed on my computer, and I can't imagine that folder would be more than a couple of megabytes.
Yeah.
So it would be great. I think we're all agreed. I will have a link to that app uninstaller from Andrew in the show notes. And I will also include a link to Hazel for people who are interested, because, like I said, that's how I manage to do that sort of thing. The other thing I wanted to talk about today is some good news, actually. Andrew and I will say, we have a special place in our heart for robocalls, and something's actually changing on that front. Right, Andrew?
Yeah, so for a while, AT&T has had this call blocking service called Call Protect. I'm not sure how long they've had it, but it's basically an app that you have to manually install on your phone, mm-hmm. like other robocalling apps that we've talked about. And I think Verizon has one, too. The good news, though, is that in the coming months, like, quote-unquote, in the coming months, we don't really have a timeline, but AT&T will turn that on by default.
Right.
Automatically, so you won't have to manually download an app.
Yeah, which would be great, because it would be nice if that basic level of protection was just rolled out to everybody, because the app itself allegedly gives you a basic level of protection, and then you can pay for additional service. And so maybe now the app will only be required if you are paying for additional service and not if you're just an AT&T subscriber. So hopefully that would cause the number of robocalls I get and the number of calls Andrew gets to drop, which would be great.
One of the things AT&T needs to do in addition to this is to stop the practice of caller ID spoofing. Because mm-hmm. what these spam callers do is they spoof a phone number that's in your area code and your prefix, and looks like it's a local call. Mm-hmm. When you block that number, it's blocked for good. But then if AT&T sells that number to a real consumer who's living in your neighborhood, then they won't be able to call you. And so you guys have got to work out a way to unblock him.
Right.
I don't know that I've ever heard that actually happening by somebody writing a story about it, but a caller ID spoofing's got to stop as mm-hmm. well, in addition to this Call Protect service.
But also at the same time, like, if they're using, you know, 1234 as the last four digits of the number and you block that number, nobody says that they can't call you again from 1235. you know, which is usually what happens. So, like, yeah, I get a lot of calls from the same, because, you know, it'll show you the city underneath the the phone number. So I will get a lot of, like, if I get a call from a particular local, like a suburb of Portland, usually they start about 8:30 in the morning. So on a day when I'm going to get a bunch of robocalls, I get one in the morning really early, earlier than most people call me, from a phone number I don't recognize that's somewhere in my vicinity. And if I let that go to voicemail, then I can see either they don't leave a message or it's, you know, some robocall to opt out, press 2, and then it hangs up. And then after that, like after I get that one, I start getting them from all the suburbs. Like, here's a call from Wilsonville, here's a call from Gresham, here's a call from Tualatin, here's a call from Beaverton, here's all, like, all that whole day will be a bad robocall day because there somebody has gotten hold of a bunch of numbers in the vicinity and really needs me to know that the IRS wants to talk to me right away, you know, or there's a problem with my Windows PC or whatever.
What's interesting to me, Kelly, is that AT&T had its cake and eat it too. They took money from paying customers for phone service, and they took money from robocallers for phone service, and they took money from both sides. And how can you serve two masters like that? How could, you know?
Well, apparently you can't.
It never really should have been allowed to happen in the first place.
There's a whole lot that led to the current robocall situation that shouldn't have been allowed to happen in the first place. Yeah. But Andrew, you're looking forward to this, right? Because maybe you can uninstall a few apps on your phone, right?
Well, I don't use AT&T.
Oh, okay.
If I did, then I would definitely be pleased.
Okay. Somehow but, I had thought you were an AT&T customer.
Okay.
I'm an AT&T customer.
Backtrack a bit.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Andrew.
So new customers will have this enabled automatically. It's the existing customers that will get it sometime in the coming months.
Okay. And it sounds like I need to call AT&T and figure out how to get them to give it to me now, if it's available to new customers now. So maybe we'll find out how that goes. I can report back tomorrow whether or not they actually went along with that. So
I've been using the Call Protect app on my phone, and it's doing a good job.
Are you using it for free, or did you upgrade to the pay service?
No, I decided to try the free version to see how it worked. Mm-hmm. It's blocking some fraudulent call attempts.
Yeah, mine's pretty feast or famine. It'll be silent for ages, and then all of a sudden, like I said, there'll be a day where I'll get a load of calls, and then nothing for a while, and then another load of calls. It's very weird. And, you know, even if I block every one of those calls that day, like, I'm still going to continue to get them because it's not one phone number that's calling me, which is weird. So yeah, the source of that data is the thing I'm the most interested in, is all these places that are doing all this robocalling. How did they get all these numbers? So
yeah,
maybe we can find that out at some point in the future. So I guess we'll see. We'll have to find out.
Well, in the past, you know, there was that whole thing about, as it turns out, carriers were giving away phone numbers to bounty hunters, I think it was.
Yeah.
So they could use it for location purposes. So I'm sure there were other things going on.
There always are. if the last 4 years have taught us nothing, that's what they've taught us, is that, yeah, there's always more to that story, whatever it may be. So we'll have to see if we can find some of that out. I think I will try giving AT&T a call this afternoon and see if it's possible to get that on the new service on an old line. So we'll have to see how well that works. And I will report back with my results if anything good comes out of that. We'll have to see. What I'm curious about, Andrew, I want to get your take on this. Since AT&T has come out and said that they're doing this, do you think that the other carriers will have to follow suit?
Yeah, I think so. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. T-Mobile has been developing this technology called Shake and Stir, which would implement some kind of system regarding robocalls. And I thought I had read and wrote that the other companies, like, it was sharing it with the other carriers. Mm-hmm. But I don't know the timeline for that rollout.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about it. I think we talked about it when they announced it, or said, like, we're working on this and we're going to share it with everybody. And I haven't seen anything about AT&T's robocall blocking that leads me to believe that they're using the T-Mobile stuff to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that actually happened or went anywhere or not. So
I don't think that they use it for their Call Protect app.
No. But on a carrier level, I wondered. I was curious because I remembered. I thought somebody else had been doing something with it. I couldn't remember if it was T-Mobile, but I remember we talked about it, and we were hopeful that since they were going to share with everybody, that it would come out soon, sooner than later. Anyway, and it's been quite a while since we talked about it, and haven't heard anything more on that front. So, but I didn't hear. I don't remember seeing Shake and Stir in any of the AT&T stuff that we saw. The little bit of the mechanics of it that were discussed, there wasn't a whole lot of detail. So I don't think it's that, which is kind of a bummer. I wonder if AT&T or if T-Mobile has included any extra information about that. We'll have to see. I'm looking forward to it. If for no other reason, yay AT&T for being the first on a carrier level to be blocking this stuff for everybody. Like, this is just going to be a thing that happens for everybody, like caller ID and voicemail. Like, this is just a thing that comes with having an AT&T account once they roll it out to everybody. So I'm hopeful that once they make it a standard feature of your plan, that everyone else will follow suit, and maybe that will help with robocalls. Cause a lot of people, like I'm pretty sure Andrew and I anyway, don't have a landline. This is my only phone number. And so having it clogged up with a bunch of calls I don't want and don't need and would actively reject given the option would really be nice. It would free up so much of my life not having to juggle all of that nonsense. So I'm looking forward to it. And Andrew, you're probably looking forward to it because you really hope that the other carriers do it since you're not on AT&T, right?
Yes. The carrier I'm using is Visible. I wrote about them a while ago.
Yeah.
It's a prepaid carrier based on Verizon's network. I should reach out to them and see what's going on, because since they're a new carrier, given their attitude about similar things, they want to be able to, you know, start fresh and implement all these great features in the beginning instead of tacking them on later. So I would hope that they would look into this.
I look forward to your piece on their stance on robocalls. And if you are with a carrier that maybe isn't one of the big ones, you know, AT&T, T-Mobile, Sprint, Verizon, if you're with somebody more local and they're doing something cool with robocalls, or they've told you that, you know, robocalls are good for America or something, let us know that. We want to find out what the mobile carrier stance is on this stuff. So if you know what that might be, you can get us at observations@macobserver.com. You can let us know at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave us comments in the show notes. All of those are ways to get a hold of us. And Andrew, I look forward to finding out what your carrier has to say about blocking robocalls, because it would be very interesting to see. And John, thanks so much for being here today.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad we got to talk about Apple and their updates. I'm always curious where those conversations are going to go, because sometimes Apple doesn't have it seems like Apple is doing something in what Apple thinks is our best interest, but in this case it actually isn't our best interest. So it's when those collide we end up having trouble. Thank you, Andrew, for coming by today to talk to me about robocalls.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And I'm glad today we had good news about robocalls and not another wave of robocalls. Yeah. Oh, you guys, you just don't even know. So I'm glad we could talk about something else. And I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. Until then, be excellent to each other.